Welcome back to the Between Dreams podcast. Today's guest, Ben Hilsinger, a drummer, but as we'll get into in a little bit, a lot more than just a drummer. And we were just talking before we started recording about how we probably have so many like years of cool travel and adventure and performance and show stories. And as I was talking to you before, I've always been kind of impressed with how you aren't just a drummer in the shadows, as can often become the case with drummers, where you're kind of back in the back, but you've always been interested in creating content on the side, and you are currently playing drums, the drummer with Eve Six, which is awesome. That's like probably for a period of people who like a 10-year window of age that are like, that's like such a huge part of people's like childhood.
It was a part of my childhood. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, I'm very humbled every time I get to hear people associate my name with that. Cause it, I mean, it took a long time to get there, but it's great. Yeah. I'm really appreciative.
Yeah. And definitely want to dig into, you know, how that happened and the stages of that. Cause people see like, oh, they're doing something awesome. And they don't get to see all of the steps.
Yeah. It was one email and they said yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. It's like so many things that are people are like, whoa, how did you do that? Who did you contact to get that? Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, well, I spent my whole life getting good at the best, becoming the best in the world at this so that it could happen. So we'll dig into that a little bit. And then also, as talking about creating content, you host your own podcast as part of Big Fat Snare Drum, and you are one of the two guys. That's your official title that I've given you.
yes, thank you.
And so we'll talk a little bit about that. So let's go back to, so for context, we were at NACA conference probably, I would say, in 2000. What year would you say that was? 2014?
Yeah, I mean, maybe sooner than that, because I moved to Seattle in 2013, so I want to say it's like 2011 or 2012.
Oh, yeah, maybe. It might.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So, yes.
Because I was playing with Jonathan Jones of Waking Ashland. We shot The Moon. And, yeah, we were doing the NACA circuit. So I saw you at a few of those showcases. And then,
yeah, so people probably have, I've talked about it enough with so many of the guests on this show. NACA is the conference where you go and audition basically to college students and their advisors to see if they'll book you to come play at their college. And that was
and
my world
way too much money.
Years of that was how I made a living for years, doing college shows, and a lot of musicians did the same. And that was a fun story with Jonathan. Of kind of the same, this will lead into the Eve Six thing of like, you know, same thing. Like I grew up, well, kind of like later, like when I was in high school, college, listening to We Awaken Ashland, and then We Shot the Moon. And then there was a day at a NACA conference when I walked up to Jonathan. I was like, hey, I used to listen to your music like all the time. Like you're like a big part of music stuff that I liked, and it was cool. And then I became good friends with Jonathan, and then you were playing drums with them, and it kind of all the whole circle came around. And that's one of my favorite things about, you know, just showbiz in general, particularly in the music thing, when there's like somebody who you've been listening to and then you just see them somewhere or whatever, and then it's like, and then you realize, oh, that's who my friends are now. All of these things
blows my mind. Yeah, I mean, I love Max and Sweet Pea, but it's past the guys in Eve Six. It's past the point of me thinking of them as the guys in Eve 6 now, and now we're the guys that are grumpy on planes at 4 a.m. and, like, short with each other, you know? So it's like, yeah, it's funny how they're like, oh, they're actually in my life now. They're not this, like, entity.
Yeah. So talk about how that came to be, because I remember a few years ago, probably more than a few years ago at this point, you were coming down. I was out in L.A. You were like, I want to move to L.A. to be, you know, in the mix with all the stuff that's happening in LA, obviously with music particularly. And I was like, yeah, it's great. And then you ended up coming. Not that that sounded like I took the credit for you moving to LA.
Yeah, geez, man. I'll give it to you. That's fine. You can have this one.
I was there before you, and you were like, how's it going? And I remember, and then I think we had like a little dinner or something at some point at my place. And when you were like, you were like coming to look at apartments or something. And that was cool. Yeah. And then you ended up there, and then you were playing drums, you know, skipping over lots of things. You ended up playing drums with Fitness, and that was the part of the bridge to get you. And I'll let you talk about that. How does that happen of somebody moves to LA and then becomes part of a band that was part of everyone's childhood, and now you're the drummer and part of this band? Like, how does that happen? As we were saying earlier, it wasn't one email said, "Hey, I'm a drummer."
Yeah. Here's my headshot. Cool. Well, my whole life has, I've never auditioned for anything. It's always just been saying yes to certain opportunities, and then those opportunities having kind of a tangential way of working it out in this other way that I never thought was going to happen. So I moved down to LA with a band called Ever So Android, who was doing amazing things up in Seattle. Our record release a month before we moved down to LA, we sold out Numo's, which is like a 600 cap venue. I think it's still there in Seattle. It might not be anymore with what's going on these days. Anyway, so I moved to LA because that was kind of the next step for the band. I didn't move down as a solo drummer, but as you do in LA, when you start meeting people, drummers are good drummers, and I'm not necessarily saying that I'm a part of this category, but good drummers are hard to come by. And so if you can show you're competent, you just get a lot of calls for random gigs. And I realized that I really enjoyed being a chameleon on the drums. And so about a year into me moving into LA, it was like this beautiful breakup where I walked around the park, Echo Park, with Ever So Android, and we had this really sad conversation about how you guys need a drummer who just wants to be your only drummer. And I like being the guy that has to learn songs in 2 days and then has to, you know, and then has to forget them for 2 months until I get another call from that same, you know, group. And then, so I decided to be just a solo drummer by myself. And I remember I'm 33 now, and I woke up on my 30th birthday, and that was the decision I made, which was to leave Ever So Android and just be like, I'm just going to trust the universe. I'm not a religious or really spiritual guy, but it was just one of those, I'm going to put this out in the universe that I want to just be a more of a freelance guy. And so that's when I made the decision to leave Ever So Android. And to backtrack a little bit, about a month before I did that, I did a demo session with this guy that I was working at a restaurant when I first moved to LA, because I didn't know anyone and I didn't have any gigs lined up. And I wasn't working for Big Fat Snare Drum yet, which is remote work. So I had to wait tables. And this guy came in. His name's Dave Green. I owe him a lot. And I'm sure he loves when I say his name and say that I owe him a lot. But yeah, he came in and he was a great guy. He just kept, you know, hey, man, I heard you're a drummer. I want you to, you know, work on these songs with me. And for some reason, I kept putting him off for a myriad of reasons. But finally, I said, okay, I have this afternoon. Let's jam. And he's a great artist. And so I ended up getting set up to do this demo with him at Kenny Carkeet, who was one of the founding members of AWOL Nation. So I went with Dave to record this demo. And me and Kenny, it was at his studio. Kenny was producing the session. And me and Kenny just hit it off. And I think I Instagrammed him, you know, a day later. I was like, hey, man, if you ever need a drummer for another session, hit me up. Talking to Kenny, not Dave. And Kenny was like, dude, I love your drumming. I'll definitely keep you in mind. So fast forward to me quitting Ever So Android and kind of putting it out in the universe, I got a call from Kenny like 2 days later, serendipitously. And he was like, hey, man, Fitness, which is the band that you referenced, and also a project that Kenny was doing with Max Collins, the lead singer of Eve Six, they had just decided to walk away from the current drummer, and they had this show in Vegas. They were like, hey, it's just a one-off show. Can you at least just learn the songs and play the show with us? And of course, I was like, this is best case scenario. You know, I'd love to play with Kenny because I love AWOL Nation. To this day, I have such mad respect for Kenny. And anyways, played the show with Fitness. And then on the way back, they were just like, do you want to just stay our drummer? And of course, I said yes. And at that time, Max had kind of used Fitness as a way to get inspired again, because Eve Six wasn't as busy at the time. And his Fitness kind of became more of his focus. And then when the original drummer for Eve Six decided to work on his own project with his now wife, he decided to walk away from Eve Six. And so I was kind of already close friends with Fitness. Obviously, me and Max are going to have the same schedule if I'm in both bands, because it's not like I'm in another band and can't make the gig. If I'm doing a fitness gig, that means Eve 6 can't also do a gig because Max is in that. So it just made sense that I was going to be the drummer for Eve 6. And that was probably 3 years ago now. And it's insane. I remember I was waiting tables still because fitness isn't a massive band. And yeah, it's one of those. I got the text that, hey man, do you want to play? It's this similar text from Max that it was from Kenny. Do you want to play this one show with Eve 6? Then we'll figure it out from there. Because I think they were playing like one or two shows a summer. And then when I joined, it was kind of this spark of happiness within the band again. Nothing against their old drummer, but just I think it was like, oh, this clicks more than it has in a while. And then Eve 6 has been insanely busy the last 3 years. And we have a new EP that's coming out. And yeah, it's just fun stuff. But that's kind of say yes to some random guy at a bar that I was friends with, and then it became me being in Eve 6 7 months later. So
yeah. It's so crazy, and I love those. I was just like, I have like so much excitement when you hear these stories of that. It was just like, yeah, there's no way to do that except that you were like, you know, and it's like, I bet, I would imagine you're sitting at the restaurant where you're working. You were like, I don't really want to be doing this with my life for that much longer. But it's like those moments of just like doing what you got to do and showing up. And that's my whole thing of like the just go thing is like, you just got to go do stuff. It's like,
absolutely.
You sit home and I get stuff all the time. People are like, oh, how do you do this? How'd you get on Ellen? How'd you get on James Corden? It was like, they were all like just weird, just like same thing, like years of just showing up. And then all of those years of showing up is what allowed the preparation. And people think it's like, oh, I need a contact. It's like, no, when you'll get the call to show up somewhere, but you got to be the best in the world at what you do. Like, you showed up for the session and you rocked it.
Yeah.
It wasn't getting invited to the session. That had nothing, because they probably worked with, you know, Kenny has worked with thousands of drummers probably.
It still blows my mind that he liked me. I mean, I'm not trying to not be humble or, you know, talking bad about myself. My girlfriend always yells at me for doing that. But it still just blows my mind that, you know, yeah, I'm humbled that he appreciated what I did.
Yeah.
But it's funny too, because people think that I was, you know, super successful driving a BMW and then I just happened to continue on to the Eve 6 thing. When I got the call, I was still working as a server, and I was in between places because I was kind of being picky about where my next spot would be. So my buddy was actually letting me crash in his house for a month because there was kind of an overlap of having to say, yeah, you know, walk out of my old place, but not being super stoked on my next step. And so when I got the call or the text, I still had to go to work for 4 more hours and then go home to a couch as the drummer for Eve 6. So it's like, it's not as glamorous as you think, and it never is. So
one of my favorite stories was when I did Ellen, I was still living at my parents' place in Pennsylvania because I was like traveling around a lot, and I was just like, well, I'm not going to go rent a place of my own. Also, I wasn't making really enough money to live anywhere that I would want to live.
Exactly. Yep.
So I was living at my parents' place, like the house that I grew up in, and I was like an adult. And
yeah,
I like flew, like, cause like I flew out to LA to do that cause I was still there. And then, so like two sides of it, the next day after Ellen, I like flew back to somewhere in upstate New York and went to a college in Rochester, New York, and performed in the cafeteria at like noon. They were like, we have a football game tonight, so you have to perform at noon, because if you perform at nighttime, there won't be anyone there. They'll all be at the football game. But also, yeah, no one's going to the juggling show in the cafeteria at noon before the football game. Like, everyone's out partying. So like, either way, no one came. Yeah. And I literally, the night before I was in LA, finished with the Ellen show, had to hustle back to the East Coast, get to the show, perform. There was nobody in the audience, like maybe like 8 people or something. And then went back home to my parents' place. And then that episode of the Ellen show aired like 3 days later or whatever. And I specifically remember like watching it, like I'm wearing like sweatpants in my parents' living room, like watching myself on the Ellen show. And then, and meanwhile, like my phone's blowing up and like Facebook is going insane. People are like, whoa, congrats, this is awesome. And I'm like, I'm wearing sweatpants and I live in my parents' house.
Yeah. No, well, that's actually going back to We Shot the Moon. That was the show that we ended up playing with Jonathan for the first time that he ended up asking us to keep going with them. Because what he would do is, and maybe Jonathan wouldn't want me to say this, but he, at the time when he was figuring out what to do next with We Shot the Moon, he would, in the city that he was playing, he would find a group of guys that would learn the songs. And it would be Jonathan, but it would be a kind of a local group of guys, which is more of an old school way of doing things. And then when we played with them, he's like, you guys are great. Let's just keep this as the core group to travel with. But our first show was at noon at Spokane Falls Community College. And it was in this makeshift stage that was like maybe 6 inches high. Like, why even have it? And it was for the little pieces were separating. So my drum set was almost falling over. And the 30 people that were in the audience were annoyed that we were there. It was just the most not rock and roll thing ever. But
that's so good. I love that. I have like such a bonding type of like, I just like feel so bonded to anyone who's ever done like more than a few college performances, because we have this like core thing of like, I don't know if it's just like, it's, yeah, I don't know. It's like some, when people go through, I don't want to say it's like we went through something difficult in life, but like,
sure. Yeah. Ooh, we got paid too much money to do our craft. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like in the realm of like showbiz and entertainment, it's like one of the coolest things and also like one of the worst experiences ever. And not to say anything bad about the NACA world and stuff. It's like, it paid my bills and was like, I have almost all of the friends that I have in my life are because of that world, but like the actual shows were sometimes some of the not fun.
It's I guess it's hard to parallel too, because with music it's like you either like it or you don't. You have a little more ability to make it like people can walk by and they're like, what's this? And then because you bring a level of comedy to your, you know, to your show and stuff. And so it was, yeah, it'd be fun for you to, I mean, did you, if I could interview you, did you view it as like, oh, this is now harder for me to win these over, so now it's like a little challenge I give myself?
No,
a passive audience.
Yeah, so I never liked that, like, because like there's some street performers who like they're like, oh, I'm gonna get the crowd on my side.
Yeah,
and I just never liked that. I wanted to do like a theater show where people came to see me, they sure. sat and they could enjoy. I didn't want to have to feel like I had to like keep them, I wanted to keep them engaged, but I didn't feel like, I don't want to have to feel like I'm like, oh, if I like don't do a big trick in the next 8 seconds, they're gonna walk away. I was like, because I want to be like a little bit of a slower paced thing. So no, sure. I did not like that when like, yeah, because sometimes you'd be in the cafeteria and you're like, guys, see if you can get a crowd. I'm like, ugh,
yeah,
I don't want to do that.
Dude, I respect that perspective, man. It's yeah, it's tough. And I get to hide behind a drum set. You just,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I was always envious. You know, I was always envious of the musicians. Because the musicians were envious of me because they were like, oh, you're doing something crazy. Like, you're going to stop people from walking by. You're doing juggling. You're on a big unicycle. You're bouncing on a ball, whatever. And I was like, yeah, but if people aren't paying attention to me, that's like a really sad guy in the corner trying to get attention. But then I was envious of the musicians because, like, you guys could totally just, like, have band practice and it's like not so painful than me being like, all right, I need someone to help me on stage for this next bit, because it like I can't do it with alone, like this whole next 10 minutes is based around someone interacting with me. And then sometimes they're like, literally wasn't a person to
yeah, I guess we can rely on the fact that musicians are inherently cool.
So yeah,
at least we're
jugglers
like, people aren't digging this. Yeah, I didn't say it, you said it, but I meant it.
Yeah, yeah, well, true. And so then going back to, and I really love that and appreciate like the stories of, you know, because like some people will be like, yeah, I was the best. That's why I got in this thing. So it's appreciate seeing that perspective of like, no, it was like this progression of like showing up a lot. And then also some people are like, well, and you got lucky. It's like, well, yeah, maybe, but showing up every day is a big part of that getting lucky.
I agree, and I am, yeah, because that people, to preface this, I never deal in absolutes. I think that's a scary kind of territory to walk into and in life in general. But yeah, when people just say it's all luck, like the fact that you were at that restaurant when that guy came in, it's luck. It's like, fine, I respect that there's luck involved, but luck got me the session. I got me the follow-up text, you know? So, yeah, you got to respect luck. And I understand that I, you know, circumstances, you know, if people are watching this video, I know I have a certain leg up in some ways with just everything that LA would need and want, and age-wise, and brown hair. I have a beard. I have long hair. I have tattoos. I get that. But, you know, it's just luck gets you the meeting. You have to get the, you know, the follow-up.
So that leads well into you as more than just a musician and someone who's interested in creating content and making stuff and just sharing things that you know. So talk a little bit about how that turned into working with a music company and now being the host of their podcast, and then all of the other things that you were telling me before we started about how you're pretty much, if someone ever reaches out to the company, it's you. Yeah. And you're kind of like the voice of this company. And explain what it is, because it's a very fascinating thing to me of like such a niched down thing is always so fascinating to me of like a world that like if you're not in that world, you would be like, oh, that, because it's like music company. Okay, I get that. Drum company. Okay, I get that. And then there's probably like four layers down. And there's you guys, and I won't explain. I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, so it's called Big Fat Snare Drum, and it's basically a drum overlay. Like, imagine you have a drum head, which has a metal rim. You cut out the metal rim, and you just have a circular piece of Mylar. If you put that freely on top of any existing tuned, like, just drum, it adds that mass, and it just immediately, you know, lowers the overtone and just detunes the drum. You can slip it on and off. People have been doing that for years, but after a few takes, because you usually do it to an old head, it just starts to warp and there's no weight on the outer rim, so it starts to kind of become this crater, if you will. And if the wind gust goes by, if you're playing outdoors, it just will blow off. So Chris, I take no credit for this, but Chris Mazzarisi, the owner and founder, basically made a prototype because he was the drummer for LMFAO, if you guys remember that band.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, dude, he has a crazy story. So, and I mean, that's a whole nother podcast on how he got that gig. Because he is, I mean, you think of, I'll just touch on it for a second. It's so funny to know Chris was in that band, because I don't think Chris has ever had a drop of alcohol in his life. He's such a responsible adult, and he is so anti everything, that vibe that you think LMFAO, which they actually do live that lifestyle. Anyways, so he was on tour a lot, and when they were out partying, he was like, I have this issue that I always, on these fly dates, because if people don't know, most of the time, you're not using your drum set. You're not flying with your drum set around the world. And so he would show up, and it was just, they call it backline gear, which is the company that's putting on the show, provides gear, and you definitely can like say what you want and whatnot. But for the most part, it's, you know, there's a little left to be desired. And so the snares would always be these crappy snares. And so he decided to have this thing that he would make that he would put on any snare, and it would make it this thuddy, awesome thing. And it was, you could, you know, put it in your carry-on. So that was the company, and that's what it is. And now we have like 70 products with different variations and weights that are on the website. And he is amazing, and I'm happy to be a part of it. But I met him through a quick story. Sweet Pea, who's the guitarist for Eve Six, left the band for a little bit, and Chris's brother, Matt Coma, who's an amazing musician, became the guitarist for Eve Six for a while. And so even when Sweet Pea came back to the band, we're all a big circle of friends. And so I met Chris through Matt on tour. And so that's kind of a one, you know, musicians, artists, once you meet someone that is kind of in your field and you don't know them, within 3 seconds, you're like, you know, like, did we just become best friends? And so I met Chris on tour, and within, you know, 2 minutes, we were just talking gear. Fast forward 3 hours later, we come up for air, and he's like, well, I got to go, but let's stay in touch. And then I basically made that gig for myself, because I was leaving the restaurant industry because I was finally getting enough money for, you know, with Eve Six. And I just texted him. I was like, hey, man, if you ever need any extra help, hit me up. You know, honestly, not asking for money. It was just, I wanted to network. He's such a cool guy. I love the product. I was a fan of the product, still am. And yeah, so he's like, yeah, dude, let's hop on the phone next week. And he had never worked with anyone. It was just him and the people that helped him make the heads, but the logistically, he's never worked with anyone. And so we got on the phone and he's like, hey man, I have to go through all these emails of like artists trying to become endorsed and, you know, basically just a laundry list of all these things needed to get done. And so I was like, yeah man, let's work this many hours a week and blah blah blah. And I kind of created this role for myself. And so about a year into the role of working with him, I had kind of become very efficient with whatever I was doing, and we had agreed on a certain amount of hours a week. And so I was like, well, I think that I should just keep making up stuff to bring more money into the company. And so I thought of the podcast, and it's now we're on like episode 50. I've been doing it for over a year now, and it's the most nerve-wracking thing and the most cumbersome thing you can possibly do. And I know I'm kind of going on a bunch of tangents. I will answer your question. But I always say, if you ever feel too good about who you are as a person, record yourself in a conversation every week, and that'll humble you right up. You know, not that I'm better at not rambling, as you can see right now. But when it comes to drumming, it's funny with fitness and trying to be more than just the drummer. With fitness, I definitely try and, you know, look at me, look at me, look at me. But outside of the drums, I think I'm trying to be more of that. And inside music, I'm trying to be less of that. So I'm trying to be less of a look at me and just fade into the background musically. Because I think that as I get older, that's the kind of drummers I really get turned on by. The Jim Keltners, James Gadsons, the Aaron Sterlings, the guys that just... And I've talked about this in other podcasts where... And meaning my own podcast, not that I am cheating on you with other podcasts. But a good drummer should be like a good set designer or a good costume designer, where if you're watching a movie and the costumes distract you or the set distracts you, then they're not doing their job. But if you just watch it and everything just makes sense that you're watching, that's when they nailed it. That's the kind of drummer I want to be. But when it comes to me as a person, I have such ADD. And so I don't think even if I was the drummer for U2 and I could literally play 4 shows a year, make, you know, $500,000 per show and then just hang out in Malibu, I would never do that. I need to always be having my day filled with 7 different things. So that's just how I work. I get really bored, really not bored, but really restless. And so creating all these avenues for me to do outside of the drums is a product of me not so much wanting to promote myself as a brand as more than a drummer, but I just know that that's how I would be happy. I have to be doing a million things. And so that comes across as the way I'm most creative is something to do with drums. And so all these things I've chosen have been drum related. And it's fun that it's starting to gain a little traction, that I am becoming a little more of a personality, I guess, with being Big Fat Snare Drums, kind of the face of the company in certain ways, especially with the podcast. And yeah, I'm not sure if that answered your question necessarily, but
I don't remember what the question was, but that's okay.
I tend to do that.
So the one thing about the set designer and the costume designer comment there, that's super fascinating. And, you know, it's a similar story to what I've been doing lately as well of like, I mean, like in these, I'm also the face of the podcast and the face of a lot of things that I'm doing, but also increasingly more so every year, I'm the behind the scenes, but, you know, producing stuff, making videos. I'm not even booking. Well, over a year and a half ago, I stopped booking my juggling show at in-person events so that I could focus on online content. Turned out to be quite lucky timing.
Good call, man.
Yeah. Somebody else was like, did you know something that we didn't know? And I was like, oh, I got a year and a half head start on everyone.
Insider pandemic training.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating of giving up. So I have a question in here, but it's framed by giving up, you know, when it's like
as anyone, whether you're a costume designer, a set decorator, a drummer, anyone that's like creating something, there's an inherent part of like ego that wants to be like, I want to show off what I can do. So how do you balance that of, I need to show off what I can do because I'm really good at this and I can do stuff that is going to impress people, but mm-hmm. I can't let that be at the expense, as you said, to be distracting to the song or the set or the costumes or, you know, whatever it is. And it's like relevant. And I want to like reinforce this again, that it's relevant to anything. You know, if you're a graphic designer, you can't show off all your graphic design skills. You know, like the Target logo is the best thing ever, but they didn't get to show off how good they can draw like cool graphics.
Yeah.
The subtlety is so key, but that might have to squash the ego and you don't get credit. But you have to be like, well, I have to sit back on this one. So how do you balance that and be willing to say, actually, for the greater good, I'm going to kind of sit back. And I don't want to be like sit back like, oh, you're like squashing your talents or something, but hey, I might not be able to do this like crazy thing that I actually can do here because it's actually not the best for the bigger picture.
Yeah, I'd say I would just, as I've gotten older, I've adjusted my target audience of who I want to impress. And so I always have this, I think every artist has this, when you like walk into a restaurant or a bar and like some bougie place where all the cool musicians hang out, I used to want to have those guys be like, or girls, oh my God, that's Ben Hilsinger. He is one of the best drummers I've ever seen. If I overheard that, I'd be like, yes. And now the compliment that I want to overhear as I'm walking by a table that recognizes me is, oh my God, that's Ben Hilsinger. He makes amazing choices. That's the thing that would get me off the most, because when I listen to music nowadays, and I'll still put on punk rock and all that stuff and go and, you know, play to MXPX and sweat my way through a song. But the things that impress me the most nowadays are, yeah, people just know how to think of the greater good. And 'cause you can learn a linear fill, or, you know, just any kind of thing behind the circus trick behind the kit. And now that when I watch that nowadays, I go, okay, it means that you've said no to a lot of party invites. You've, you know, probably been a little antisocial certain times because you've just been in that practice room for 10 hours a day and just worked on your craft, which is so respectable. But when I see people like, you know, say the drum beat for Come Together by the Beatles, in the verses, he's literally doing quarter notes, or sorry, eighth notes on the floor tom. It's the simplest beat that a baby can do, but it's the most rock and roll thing that gives me chills when I think about it, because I would have just gone do some random rock beat, but he just keeps it down there. And when I hear that stuff, it gives me chills. And that's the kind of stuff that I want to be known for, is someone that gives good choices, not skill level. Because honestly, there's millions of drummers that are better than me. No one's ever the number one drummer. You know, like, you won drums. Like, you know, there's no Olympics for drumming. And if it is, it's like, oh, you're the fastest drummer, but cool, that's fine. You have a quick twitch fiber, fine.
But and what would the prize be also?
No money, because that's what drummers make. Your prize, yeah, your prize is half off a cheeseburger. But yeah, I guess that's how I balance it, because I've come to peace with that's, I don't want to impress the people that are impressed by showmanship drumming. That's cool. Maybe that's for the youngins. But if someone says, hey man, I think I'm way better than you on the drums, but you think of the coolest parts, and that's why I love your playing. Kind of a backhanded compliment, but I'd take that over someone saying, you're the craziest skilled drummer.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So I'm fine with it. If I'm in a band like Dr. Dog, which is one of my favorite bands these days, and Eric Slick, who's the drummer for that band, he's just a pocket player, but he does little tasteful things on like the bridge going back into the chorus. That's like, oh my gosh, that's cool. But the rest of the song is just holding it down. Might not impress most people, but I think it impresses the right people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And I think that's like so if there's like a life lesson or career lesson in any of that, it's like, and that kind of comment you said of like the young ones or something, it's like, yeah, I think that's like a sign of like being maturely like, okay, like I'm gonna actually think about what's important. And it's not, you know, I think about it a lot with like camera stuff and stuff. It's like, it's like, I think that's true of like amateur photographers and videographers do flashy transitions and you know, crazy edits, but it's like the real professionals, like when you watch like a really good movie, like there's nothing flashy about it. It's like a good story, again, relating to like they made good choices of like, there's no flashy, like, yeah, it's all produced well, but like it's not punchy, you know, it's not some punchy real fast cuts thing or something. It's like, okay, let's focus on what's actually important. So I think that's super great.
Yeah, and so with like filming and stuff, I mean, I'm sure you get this all the time when you're watching a great movie, you forget that you're like watching a movie. You're just like, it's almost like it zooms in, you're in the world, because they're just so seamless and it just, it makes sense. And that's when someone does their job, but no one talks about it, you know?
Yeah. So, and I love that. That could kind of tie up a lot of this, of so many things, like, because most people that are listening to this won't be drummers. Also, they won't be videographers or photographers. But it's like, how do you make the work that you do, like, just seamlessly integrate into the customer or the audience experience of whatever they're trying to experience with whatever content or whatever you're making? I think that's like a really core thing, and I think that's like resonates through a lot of the stuff that I talk about, but I don't know if it's ever been kind of expressed in that way, which is fascinating to me, of like, that, how do you get it to just blend into what the actual user is trying to experience?
It's fun. So there, one of my favorite comedians, John Mulaney, and he talks about, I'm going to butcher this if John's listening, but he talks about, he had a breakthrough with his content and or stand-up comedy when he would talk about his dad, and he would try and talk about it in this kind of ambiguous way that everyone can relate to. So he was avoiding all the specifics. He was just making these generalities, and it was like true stories, but they weren't hitting. And then he's like, okay, I'm going to start saying the most specific stories detailed about my dad. And that's when he started to crush, because people don't necessarily need to be given content that you think would relate to everyone. But if you talk about something specific and vulnerable, they could go, that hasn't happened to me, but that so sounds like something my dad would do. I know what he's talking about. So, and I think it's, I know Martin Scorsese has talked about it, like the most real or the most like authentic. So if you just put out content that is vulnerable and really you, even though someone hasn't had that exact experience, just through the human condition, they know exactly what you're saying by telling your specific personal story. So that's why I try and be on the podcast. I'm not cool. I don't think I'm cool. I there's so many drummers and musicians that I don't know. And so when, during the podcast, if people bring people up, I'll be the first to be like, I'm sorry to interrupt you. That, who are you talking about? I'm sorry. I could just keep, you know, nodding and pretending like I know who this guy is or this girl is. But, and so I think people relate to just, yeah, honest content that is actually, the more specific you are, the less alienating you are in a weird way.
Yeah. Oh, that's a whole new podcast. That's that's like so good though, of like, cuz and again, that, so like again, to tie it up in that of like committing to, it's an interesting thing, like in that snare drum thing, you lost a few people about like tones of drum and all
that. Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's cool. And but you don't need all the, you know, it's like when you niche down to this thing by like really locking into solving one problem, like with a business, you're solving one specific problem. When you're creating content or something, you're attacking like one very specific person, not a group, not even a group of people. It's like, talk about that. Scott Neary, great creator from Booby Trap in LA.
Love him.
Talks about so much about that, of like, how can you niche down to your target audience, whether you're making a product or making a podcast? What if you were just making it for one person? turns out if there's one person, there's a bunch of others that are just like that person too. But if you try to hit the whole group, you'll miss them because they're, you know, really lock that into a niche down thing, which is really cool. Relevant to being specific with whatever you're doing, content, making a product, making anything, starting a business. What is like that? And it's interesting, the snare drum thing of like, well, there's like really one little tiny problem that drummers have. Turns out to be really important and a big solve that like solves a lot of their solves a lot of problems. It's amazing. Well,
two points on that. So most of my podcasts that I listen to are not drum related. They're just people that are excited about what they're talking about. And I get off on so many people. I don't even need to care about what you're talking about, but if I know that someone's stoked and they're just going a million miles an hour, as a human and as an artist, I just resonate with that. So there's that. And also going back to your just niching your audience, I'm sure you've heard of the 1,000 true fans theory. Yeah. It's you don't need to reach a million people, you know? And so just you'd be surprised how niche you can get and do very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I don't think very many people realize that, especially if there's young people listening or old people or whatever, of like, oh, you need a million followers on TikTok. Like, I know people who have several million followers on TikTok, and it's like their audience is so all over the place that like half the stuff they post doesn't land. And I know people who have, you know, 8,000 followers, and it's like everything's perfectly, you know, the audience loves it even more because it's made just for them. So anyone that's listening, you know, my show, as you know, has a lot of these like takeaways. And that I think that's a core thing of like, make something very specific for a very specific person in your audience. And then it's like, it relates back to before, like, and then keep showing up as you show up, go to the session, play drums. Like, yeah. You did a lot of other ones before that one too. And it's like, oh, they weren't failures. They were preparing you for the next one. And it's like, not that that's saying that that's the ultimate thing. You'll do more sessions in the future and who knows where it'll go. So it's an always, it's like we never arrive at it. And it's like, you're a good example of that, of progressing throughout the years. And it's like, I was, you know, it's like Jonathan and then with Kenny and then Max and like, going through it, and it's like, and then what's next? You know, you might be growing into new opportunities and other things and building companies and things like that. So it's awesome. So let's tie it up. And that was my takeaway. I'll give you the floor for a minute or so. Give the listeners, if they're like, cool, I think I understand all this, give them one last tie up of somebody that's like, whether they're a drummer, musician, videographer, photographer, or they want to be a podcaster, they want to start a podcast so that they can maybe host a podcast for one of their favorite companies one day. What advice do you give them today that they can get started and take the first step to get there, to make it happen for themselves?
The first time I did a podcast, it sucked. The first time I picked up a drumstick, it sucked. The first time I do almost anything, golfing, it sucks. The first time you ask a girl out, it sucks, you know? And I've realized that no one cares. if you put something out and it's not good, no one's going to stop being your friend. No one's going to stop respecting you. It's just, put stuff out. People are excited, especially in this day and age. People are excited when someone's doing something, and people want to inherently support people that are doing something. Just do it. You know, it's going to be bad. And I think you and me talked about it at the very beginning, when you should be stoked. If you're someone who doesn't have a huge platform right now, this is the time when you should be grateful for not having a huge platform while you're trying things. Because some people want to pivot and they have the platform to put out stuff, but they're going through this finding out who they are as artists while people are watching and judging and commenting and saying things. And then, yeah, so I think if you are someone who, like, I have no following, I'm at such a disadvantage, so it's going to be a huge hill to go up, you, I think, are in such a better place than someone who is quote unquote, you know, there, you know?
Yeah.
So just do it, and it's going to suck at first. It might not. It might be amazing. Hopefully it's not. But I know from my experience and most of the very successful people that I have become close with, they look back on some of the things, anything creative they did, and they're just, they laugh at it because they have this romantic relationship with it. Like, that's so funny that that's where I was and this is where I am. But they don't look at, they're not embarrassed. They just laugh at that.
Yeah,
so just do it. Just do it. People will support you whether they comment on every video like, this is amazing. If I see any of my friends doing something, even if I'm not, if it's not good, I'm just like, that's so brave. That's so awesome. I'm so stoked for you. And I think most people are like that.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that perspective and all of the stories. Glad to have you here. So what's the best place for, what's the best method for people to check out the podcast if they want to?
Yeah, so it's called Big Fat Five, where basically we bring on an artist that I look up to and ask them five anything. It used to be, you know, five specific things with every guest, and now I'm kind of letting them choose what their list is, because who doesn't like lists? But yeah, so search, I mean, anywhere you find podcasts, Big Fat Five. Big Fat Snare Drum is on Instagram, at Big Fat Snare Drum, if you want to hear me talk more about geeky snare stuff. And you can follow my personal page, which has more of my drumming and my weirdness. And it's just my name, at Ben Hilsinger.
And there's a Eve 6 new music?
Yes. New Eve 6 EP. It was supposed to come out back in March, but now it's been pushed back. Should be out at the beginning of this next year. And then we're also working on a full-length record. So lots of new Eve 6 stuff coming up. Music video for the new song is happening in like a week and a half. So yeah, follow at Eve 6 if you want to feel a part of that whole crew.
Cool. So for context, depending on when people are listening to this, new EP beginning-ish of 2021?
Yes.
And full length probably in 2021?
And yes, and in if you're listening to this in 2022, world domination of Eve 6 happened about April.
yeah. Just lay it out there.
I'm already. I've gone to rehab 7 times with the massive success after this.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing, and really appreciate that. And for people who are... that might have known the Waking Ashland and We Shot the Moon, there is an old interview with Jonathan Jones on my podcast. It was like early days, probably from 6 years ago. Speaking of things that when you listen to earlier work and you're probably embarrassed by, that one might be one of them.
Yep.
So awesome, man. Thanks so much for sharing.
Dude, thank you, man. That was fun.